News. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Although the debate over the Affordable Care Act promises to rage on, key provisions of the act kick in today. The health care exchanges, where you go to choose a health care insurance plan, opened around the country this morning. Anything new holds the promise of complexity and confusion, but changes brought on by the Affordable Care Act take the cake because your choice of plans and the rates you'll pay from state to state vary greatly. Further, both North and South Carolina decided to opt out of running their own exchanges and declined to expand Medicare, bringing another set of complications and more questions about how to achieve the kind of health care coverage promised by Obamacare. This hour, we look at how these exchanges work, what you have to do to get ready, who is covered, what is not, who is not, and more. Adam Linker is a policy analyst with the Health Access Coalition of the North Carolina Justice Center. That's a statewide nonpartisan consumer advocacy organization. Welcome to the program. Mr. Linker is in our studio, our Spirit Square studio, with Don Jonas, Executive Director at CareRing, a nonprofit that provides access to medical and dental care to the uninsured and underinsured. Thank you for joining us. And Renard Murray is Regional Administrator at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for the Atlanta and Dallas Regional Offices, which handles 13 states, including North and South Carolina. He joins us by phone from Atlanta. And finally, in our studio is Bob Seehausen, Senior Vice President of Business Development and Sales for Novant Health, a four-state integrated network of hospitals, outpatient centers, and physician practices. I'm hoping that much of what you have to contribute to this conversation would also apply to CMC and other hospital systems in North and South Carolina. Would that be the case?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. First, some nuts and bolts. The healthcare exchanges opened this morning. What exactly are these things, and how do they work? And who should I ask that question of? I have no idea.
I can start if you want to.
Okay, go ahead.
So the health insurance exchanges are basically online marketplaces where people will be able to go at from healthcare.gov and search for different plans based on their needs and sort those plans, get apples-to-apples comparison between them. And then they can put in some information about their income and family size and find out if they qualify for help purchasing a plan, help paying their premiums. And so really you'll be shopping online for insurance, and we really don't have anything like that right now.
Can I pick up the phone this morning and call Blue Cross and buy a policy?
You can just call Blue Cross if you want to.
And so it doesn't matter. You don't have to do this, but the point is that you have to get insurance.
Well, a lot of people have to buy insurance if you can find an affordable policy. But you can still call Blue Cross if you want, or you can go online and see sort of all of your options that are available.
What's important is that those folks that have not been able to purchase insurance previously, they maybe had a pre-existing condition or it's too expensive, going online is the only place you can go in order to get a subsidy in order to purchase health insurance. So if you called Blue Cross Blue Shield directly, you're not going to have the subsidy available to you unless you've gone through the marketplace to apply.
And you don't necessarily get the subsidy even if you have a pre-existing condition. It depends on income, right?
It's based upon your income. That's right. If you're between 100% of the federal poverty level up to 400% of the federal poverty level, there's a sliding scale of subsidies that are available to you.
Do you want to chime in on this, Mr. Murray?
Oh, you know, I can't wait to get in on this one here. Yes. That's great. I agree with all that was said, but it's important to understand that with the marketplaces that went live this morning, it's for those individuals who don't have any insurance coverage at all. That's our main target that we're looking at this point. And as you mentioned, Mike, the private market that's been in existence for years now will still be there. But with the marketplace, it provides a wonderful opportunity that a person can go online, as mentioned at healthcare.gov, to apply for insurance. And then there's also a call center available where individuals can call us and we can walk them through the process of applying for insurance coverage to get them the option that works best for them.
I hate giving out phone numbers, but that phone number is 800 318 2596, and we'll put that up on our website at WFAE.org so people will have access to it.
Yeah, Mike, we also want to make sure people don't forget about the brokers in the community, because all of the licensed insurance agents who can signed up with Blue Cross or with Coventry Health Plan can talk to people about the options, can help them guide through the benefit selections, their subsidies, and it gives you an individual to talk to live.
Okay, but I think it was you, Don, who said that if you need a subsidy, you have to go through these exchanges to get them, or was it you, Adam?
Well, you can go, just to clarify, there's several different entry points into this online marketplace. You can go directly to the insurance company, and Blue Cross can get you a subsidy through the exchange. A health insurance broker or agent can get you a subsidy in this marketplace, or you can just go online yourself or go to a nonprofit.
So let's cut to the chase. Mm-hmm. Who should be going, beginning today, and you don't have to do it today, you have several months to do this, but beginning today, who should be going to the website, healthcare.gov, to look at these exchanges?
Anybody that
doesn't have an insurance, right, exactly. And those individuals who, as mentioned earlier, who've had pre-existing conditions, or have private coverage already that's really, really expensive, they might find a better deal in the marketplace. So there's a number of different plans available throughout the state of North Carolina. And on the healthcare.gov website, you can see those plans. But in addition, Mike, if you're on the website and you have questions, because people oftentimes have challenges with trying to get through sites on their own, there's a live web chat feature on there where you can actually talk to a representative via web chat. And if that's not working for you, the call center that you mentioned earlier, the toll-free number that you gave, it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Operators in both English and Spanish, and we can accommodate up to 150 other additional languages spoken on that line.
And do we know what the hold times will be like, or is this going to be a nightmare beginning this morning?
We've got about 10,000 people actually employed through that line. So we've got seven different call centers located throughout the country.
How many people live in America? How many million?
But they're not all going to be doing this at one time. There's probably some people that are out working and doing other things with their families now. So there's a number of options available.
All 50 states had the opportunity to open up and run their own exchanges. Both North and South Carolina declined to do so. They have opted to let the federal government run the exchanges. How does that action impact citizens who live in the states that opted not to be involved?
Well, it doesn't impact them at all, because in all of our states, there's going to be a health insurance marketplace. It's just that in the states, in the Carolinas, for example, that you mentioned earlier, they've opted not to do that. So it doesn't affect the availability of the marketplace in those states. It's just that those states, for instance, in this region, Kentucky is our only neighboring state that's actually running its own marketplace, and they're doing the same operations that the federal government's doing. So it really doesn't impact you at all.
And why did states opt not to do this? Because there are a lot of states, all the states that opted not to do this, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, are run by Republican governors and or Republican legislatures, and it seems almost obstructive. They don't want this to go through, and they don't want it to be successful, and it seems that that is the modus operandi here. Is that the case, or am I just making that up?
I think that's what most people would say. I think the real story is the lack of Medicaid expansion. While the marketplaces are an important tool, the real economic impact to the communities and the people who can't afford health care was that Medicaid expansion.
I explain that because, as I understand it, the Medicaid expansion is part of this health care package, and the federal government is going to fund it in all of the 50 states that take advantage of it 100% for 3 years. In the fourth year, it would go to 90%. In the fifth year, the ratio would change yet again, and North Carolina said, at least, that they couldn't afford it, because in the fourth year, it would be more money the state would have to spend on Medicaid. Do they have a point?
I think if you look at the analytics that were run by the North Carolina Institute of Medicine, that is an incorrect statement. There's a lot of new federal money that comes in to cover the Medicaid enrollees. There are people who are going to sign up who have been eligible today. Net-net, it was a positive influx of money for the state of North Carolina.
And Renard Murray, you are the Medicare-Medicaid guy. You run 13 states, as a matter of fact, the 13 states that you control are the biggest Medicare users in the country. So would I be wrong in saying that if we covered people with Medicaid who are not currently receiving coverage over the course of the next 3 years so that they could go to a doctor, get checkups, get preventive care, that in the fourth year when the federal government is overspending, is only spending 90% to the states, that they would be healthier and would probably require less expenses.
That is exactly correct, Mike. And the other part to that is, you know, a lot of individuals who don't have insurance use the emergency room as their source of primary care. So providing them with Medicaid and or the marketplace that we mentioned earlier would give them access to preventive care and primary care as well that would keep them healthy, and a host of things that would go along with that to make sure that they're taking proper care of themselves will be provided. But the other thing that's important to understand with Medicaid expansion, yes, the state may not have chosen to expand Medicaid at this point, but it's not an ending argument. The state can choose at any given time to expand Medicaid, and at the point that it expands Medicaid and that expansion is approved, those individuals that are eligible for Medicaid in terms of Medicaid expansion would be granted access to the Medicaid program. So it's not a closed and done deal. It still can be done by the state, but the legislature and the governor has to decide to make that decision to expand Medicaid.
Okay, Don Jones.
Yeah, well, from our perspective at Caring, one of the tragedies of the whole Affordable Care Act was by not expanding Medicaid, those folks that are with the very least, the poorest of the poor, those folks that are at 100% of the federal poverty level or below, will not have access to Medicaid in North Carolina, nor will they be able to receive a subsidy to purchase insurance on the market, because the idea was that once you get between 100 and 400%, you'd get a subsidy, but below 100%, Medicaid would expand. So there are 160,000 people in the Mecklenburg County region, of which there's 70 or 80,000 of those people that might be eligible for Medicaid, but they won't be because we're not expanding.
So the poorest of the poor, the people that need it the most, the people who have the least access to health care, will continue to have the least access to health care despite the health care affordable.
That's correct. So they're going to continue to rely on places like CareRing, Shark Community Health Clinic, C.W. Williams. They're going to show up at the emergency room doors at our hospitals because they're not going to have care.
In the aftermath of the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act, we had several conversations on this program, and off the air I asked members of the insurance businesses who were on the program and hospital systems that were on the program, how do you feel about this? And almost to a person, every one of them said, we need to do something, and this is a good first step. This is a good idea, this Affordable Care Act. I don't know how Novant feels about it, but I'd like to ask.
Well, we absolutely think that getting people access to affordable health care is extremely important for the health of the individual and for our communities.
I'm going to be cynical here. Is that because more people will have access to health care now and you'll make more money, or is it because this will actually lower the cost of health care provided by such as people going to the emergency room because they don't have a doctor?
Well, you know, believe it or not, we really want people to stay healthy. We would much rather see them in good health, leaving a fruitful life, than sick and, you know, occupying beds in a hospital. So, number one, the more we can help people stay healthy, the better off we are. Certainly, individuals who can pay part of their bill are better than the charity care that we're providing today, mm-hmm. which is a substantial burden on every hospital health system.
But I'm hearing that it's going to continue because of the people who are not covered by the lack of expansion of Medicaid.
That's exactly right.
So it will not be as effective as you had hoped.
That's right.
Where was the hospital lobby in all of this?
Oh, we were quite active in trying to push for expansion. It was a political decision in North Carolina. There have been a number of Republican governors who have decided to accept the money. The math is pretty basic, and they saw the answer.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about these exchanges and particularly about choices in North and South Carolina in terms of what you can choose on these exchanges when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Wynton Marsalis with Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and Chorale Le Chateau, traversing jazz history, spirituals to hard bop. October the 8th, Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. Tickets at 704-372-1000. And Carolina Raptor Center featuring fall photo wild sessions October 12th, 13th, and 19th. More than 20 birds in natural settings and free flight. Details at carolinaraptorcenter.org. Well, are you ready for the next natural disaster, the revolution, the end times? Probably not, but there are those who are. Some have built shelters, stocked up on food. They conduct drills. They have gas masks on hand and more. They call themselves preppers. There are thousands of them around the country who believe that it's better to be prepared than to be sorry. And we'll meet a few of them tomorrow at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, budget battles in Washington, the latest political showdown over funding the government and extending the debt limit.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the health care exchanges that opened this morning because of the Affordable Health Care Act with Don Jonas, who's executive director of Care Ring. They have long dealt with and continue to deal with people who are uninsured and underinsured, to helping them find health care. Adam Linker is a policy analyst with the Health Access Coalition of the North Carolina Justice Center. Bob Seehausen is the senior vice president with Novant Health. And Renard Murray is the regional administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services out of Atlanta. He joins us by phone. We gave out a telephone number. The healthcare.gov is the place to go to get on to, with these exchanges, but there's also several numbers. We mentioned a toll-free number a little while ago, which we'll post on wfae.org/charlottetalks for you to go to it. But there's another number, Don, that opens October the 15th for North Carolinians.
That's right. So there's been some funding that's been made available for navigators, that their job is to help to guide people through the process of signing up online for the marketplace. And starting October 15th, if you're a North Carolinian, you can call 1-855-733-3711. And when you call into that number, it's coordinated at the state level, and then they will send you to a navigator that's closest to your community. So, for example, here in Charlotte, there are three different organizations with 10 full-time paid navigators that will be their job, is to guide people through that process.
That begins October the 15th. We'll put that number as well on our website at WFAE.org. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, if I can also add something to what Adam just mentioned. Yes, that is available October the 15th, but right now, those persons that are going to healthcare.gov, we also have a Find Local Help button on our website. And on the website, it will also guide you to the navigators, application assisters, other counselors and government agencies throughout North Carolina who can help individuals to navigate the health insurance marketplace as well. That's up and running now.
There are many states.
For local help, you can find it.
There are many states that have made it very difficult for people to get access to these navigators. They've physically put up roadblocks. They've told them that they cannot go, for instance, to health departments and camp out to help people navigate this. They're deliberately doing this, which sounds cynical and almost criminal to me, but that they're doing it. What's the case in North Carolina, Adam?
Well, in North Carolina, there are real implications to our resistance to health reform. One of them was, at the beginning of the year, we got a federal grant of $74 million. $24 million of that was to hire 500 people across the state to go out and teach people about reform and help them navigate the website. It was also going to set up a call center in North Carolina so that we could have North Carolinians help North Carolinians mm-hmm. answer questions. Mm-hmm. And we sent that money back to Washington at the beginning of this year. So that has real implications because we have a lot fewer navigators now. We don't have a really robust call center here.
That money was also to help people, to put out advertising, to help people know what to do and how to do it. And we turned right. it back. We turned that back. What was the situation? Anybody know what the situation is in South Carolina?
I don't believe that they have even a partnership exchange, because so that means they don't have that money either.
Because Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, wants to kill affordable health care.
Yes, but in South Carolina, they do have navigators on site there. We've got navigator grantees that are actually working as we speak now, trying to get people informed and educated and enrolled in the marketplace.
Some states, when you go to healthcare.org and healthcare.gov, excuse me, and you go to these exchanges, some states have greater choices in terms of plan prices and what's being offered by those plans, and in terms of insurance companies available to buy plans from. And in North Carolina, as I understand it, there are only three insurance companies. Two. It's going to be, okay, only two. Blue Cross Blue Shield and
Coventry.
Why?
Well, we have a state with a limited number of insurers to begin with.
Why?
It's just the way the market has evolved here. I can't tell you what is driving all those differences, but Blue Cross and Coventry have stepped up to provide products on the individual exchanges. Many of us expect that the others will follow in subsequent years, that they're really letting Blue Cross and Coventry kind of clear the minefield, navigate all the first-year hiccups and logistics, and once the risk profile, the underwriting sort of settles out in the first, second, third year, there will be others.
So in South Carolina, how many companies do people have?
They have four in South Carolina.
Four in South Carolina.
And one of them is a co-op.
Yeah.
Which is a co-op is a special category under the Affordable Care Act, which is, as it sounds, it's sort of a community-driven organization that has received additional federal funding to create startup infrastructure and put people out on the street. So it's more of a consumer-owned health plan.
Now, the term affordable is certainly in the eye of the beholder and how much money you have in your pocket at any given time. And for people who have never had insurance or who have already always gotten insurance from their employers, and I think this is one of the problems with healthcare in America, is that most of us who have been insured have been insured historically by our employers. So it's free. We have no feeling of any cost. So if now suddenly you have to buy insurance, well, how is that affordable? Are these policies affordable?
Well, Mike, I can add to that. What we've seen nationally in terms of the premiums, it's about 16% lower than we had originally expected. And we know that about 95% of people living in the states without insurance expect lower premiums before taking into account any financial assistance. So nearly about 6 in 10 uninsured Americans could get insurance for $100 or less with financial assistance. And if there's an expansion to Medicaid, that would also be the case. But I know particularly in North Carolina, there's almost about 1 million people that would qualify for either the tax credits that was mentioned to help pay for insurance premiums, and or some of the subsidies that we talked about earlier that will lower their out-of-pocket expenses for co-insurance and deductibles. So I think in terms of when you look at it globally, individuals who have exorbitant expenses now for insurance coverage and those individuals who can't buy insurance coverage now will benefit tremendously in the marketplace. And I do encourage them to start looking effective today to see what's available.
You just said that around the country, the premiums for insurance policies on these exchanges has turned out to be 16% lower than you anticipated they would be. Is that given the lack of competition in some areas, why?
Well, I think it's because of the market. These insurance companies that are competing in the marketplace, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, this is nothing more than a place to go and shop for insurance. And so insurers will have to make those premiums attractive to draw in those members that will be providing coverage to. So as a result of the competition, we're finding that the competition has driven the cost down. And as my other colleagues mentioned just a few minutes ago, as more insurers enter the market, you may see that trend to continue as we move forward into the marketplace.
Go ahead. I was going to say it depends on a lot of times your individual circumstances too, how much you'll benefit. So a family of four making $50,000 a year, the parents are in their upper 30s, they could be paying for a 70-30 plan about $280 a month, which is less than you could buy that policy for now, a family policy. They could buy a 60-40 plan for probably about $40 or $50 a month.
Let's explain terms, 60, sure. 40, 70, 30.
So those are, you hear about how much basically the insurance company pays and how much of cost you're responsible for.
So a 70-30 plan, the insurance company would pay 70% of the cost of whatever the procedure is or the doctor visit, and you pay 30%.
It's sort of like the state health plan.
Is that after deductibles are met?
That's adding in the total costs of what an average person would pay, would end up paying about 30% of the cost.
Because a report by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reports that the average premium for the lowest cost silver plan, there's a bronze plan, a silver plan, a gold plan, a platinum plan. The silver plan is the second
70-30.
Lowest. 70-30. All right. Would be $361. And for the lowest cost bronze plans, $282. That's per month.
Correct? Right.
Is that affordable? That's a lot of money to pay. That's a house, that's a car payment.
Again, it depends on your individual circumstances. For a family, like I just mentioned, who's paying $280 a month, that's less than they could get a family plan for currently.
Well, you mentioned our employer-based system. Most of us get insurance through our employer, and we sign up, and then it comes right out of our paycheck each month, and we don't think about it again. But a lot of the folks that we're serving, some many lower-income folks in the Charlotte region, have never experienced insurance before. They come to our clinic, which is not a free clinic, but they pay $50 to get service. And there are people going through their purse trying to get the $50 just to see us that time. And we're expecting these folks to be ready to pay on a monthly basis to keep their premium. And then there's copays that are coming as well. So I think
we need to be deductibles.
And we need to be aware as we move into this system in the coming 3 to 6 months and 12 months, are we ready as a society?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I think there's an awful lot of folks that I love the idea that the access to insurance has been opened. But let's keep our eyes wide open as these people are struggling to pay bills and to get food, and now here comes another payment they've got a budget for each month. This could be a problematic.
And this is where it gets complex because people like the people that you're talking about, theoretically speaking, would be eligible for subsidies, which might take the cost of this insurance to zero.
It would take it way down for many of the people that we see, yes.
And they may also get benefit subsidies so that they may have a lower out-of-pocket mm-hmm. on a silver plan in addition to a subsidized premium. So right. Somebody else might have a $6,000 max out-of-pocket. That individual could go down as low as $1,700. So there are benefit subsidies in addition to premium subsidies.
And just to put a fine point on it, if you with the Medicaid expansion, if you're a single individual who's not currently eligible for Medicaid and you make $12,000 a year, there will be a premium-free option for you in the marketplace. If you are that same individual and you make $10,000 a year, so less than the person who has a premium-free option, $10,000 a year, you will get no help in the marketplace. You will get no subsidy because we didn't expand Medicaid.
And Mike, just to add to that, to kind of put it in context in terms of dollar amounts, in North Carolina, when we're talking about the subsidies at 400% of poverty, for an individual, that's $45,960 a year of income. So if you make less than that, you may qualify for a subsidy. For a family of four, that's $94,000 per year that you could be making and still could possibly qualify for a subsidy. So we're talking, not just your poor people. We're talking possibly some of your middle-class citizens that could possibly qualify for these tax credits that we mentioned earlier.
Bob.
And Mike, just to follow on, I think some of the most visible changes in the affordability are going to vary by age. So folks who are older, who probably have some health conditions, may end up with a much more affordable premium than they can get today. The rub comes in with the younger folks who may have gotten very favorable rates because of their age. They might have had policies that didn't include maternity. I used to think my auto insurance was affordable until I added my teenagers.
Yeah.
And then all bets were off.
And let's talk about that for a second, because if people get a door ding in a car, they generally don't use their insurance to cover the – they either don't get it fixed or they pay for it out of pocket because they don't want their premiums to go up.
That's right.
Are we overusing – will we be going to the doctor too much because we have insurance now and we'll be filing – in other words, if everybody has insurance and we're going to go to the doctor for every sniffle, is that going to offset the cost savings that we hope to achieve with this?
Well, if I could just share the experience of the high-risk pool in North Carolina, Inclusive Health. When we operated the federal pool – we saw a significant surge in usage of insurance when people finally got access to it. But over time, it started leveling out, and their usage approached the population we were serving.
So these healthcare exchanges open today. How long do we have before we must make a decision about what plan we want, what we think we can afford, et cetera?
Wait. December 15th, hit it before December 15th, you'll be effective January 1st.
So you'll start paying the premiums and you will be insured effective January 1st if you make a decision by December 15th. What if you don't make a decision by December 15th?
You've actually got until March in this first cycle. It's a six-month open enrollment. Mm-hmm. And so you can go as long as March and you will just miss insurance coverage and the premiums for the first couple months of the year.
What if you don't do anything? What if you don't do it?
Well, there's a there's an individual penalty that is, 1% or I think about $95.
The first year.
The first year, which will increase in subsequent years.
Many people will find it more beneficial, at least in terms of their pocketbook, to pay the penalty.
Yeah, but we find that a lot of people, and I think polling bears this out, that people, and we sort of go around the state constantly giving presentations and talking to people, and the real what people keep saying is it's just unaffordable. Mm-hmm. So if you get the affordability, if you bring it more reasonable affordability, then they're more likely to purchase insurance no matter what the penalty is.
And young people, I would think, would be reluctant to do this because young people are generally healthier.
The invincibles, yes.
Is there a way to buy a plan that is not quite as comprehensive as perhaps a 65-year-old person would want, but will cover catastrophic care? You have a car accident. You have some kind of an unforeseen illness that really is monstrously expensive to treat. Are there plans for that situation?
Right. There is a plan like that that we call it actually that. We call it a catastrophic plan, and it's for individuals that are 30 years and under. But what the catastrophic plan does, it provides coverage to the extent that you get three primary care visits per year and preventive services, but the actual out-of-pocket expenses for that individual are much less because we know that the actual premium is going to be lower because of the coverage, and the deductibles and other things have all been higher because they don't go to the doctor that often. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it provides an option for those 30-year and under individuals who are eligible. And as you mentioned earlier, individuals that are up to 26 can stay on their parents' record anyway on their parents' insurance through the employer. So that market's already covered, but those individuals that are under 30 would be eligible in the catastrophic plans.
Bob Seehausen.
Yeah, and I think one thing that people don't realize is many of these benefit plans, even the catastrophic, is richer than a lot of what's on the street today in North Carolina.
Meaning what?
There are a lot of individuals who have bought policies today that have $10,000 deductibles, $20,000 deductibles. So at, $6,000.
For people who've never had insurance, that means you have to have $10,000. If you have a $10,000 deductible, you have to spend $10,000 out of pocket before your insurance kicks in. Correct?
I see.
All right. I'm
That's
sorry.
It.
So, yep. So now you have a richer policy here, which means what?
That's right. Well, it means that people can get better coverage many times at a more affordable price. It creates, hopefully, a better chance that we can get paid as healthcare providers for that deductible. Don mentioned that, there's an out-of-pocket issue with any of these. You know, health systems and physicians are running significant bad debt, even on insured people today.
If you don't buy a policy on the exchanges by the end of March, you're out. Until when? Next October? When
it happens again in October.
And there are some special enrollment periods.
Exactly.
If you meet certain circumstances, but then if you don't trigger one of those special enrollment periods, mm-hmm. then you'd wait until.
Well, very quickly, I have 30 seconds. What if I buy a policy in North Carolina because I live here and I get transferred in 3 months to Oklahoma? What happens then?
That could be one of those special enrollment periods that we just mentioned.
So you'd have to go through the healthcare exchanges in Oklahoma and repurchase insurance?
You go to healthcare.gov and shop what's available in Oklahoma and see what your options are.
Is the same true if I lose my job?
Yes, same true. If you lose your job or if there's a change in your income or you didn't qualify for the tax credits, you may qualify now.
Okay.
You still have to go back to the marketplace to do that again.
Okay, let me take a break. We'll come back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, presenting Modernism and Changing Times, works from 1968, a chronological look at the museum's permanent collection exploring abstraction, geometry, and more. Details at beckler.org. And Trinity Episcopal School in Uptown Charlotte, redefining academic rigor by engaging the minds and hearts of students, hosting a K-8 open house October 16th, 7 p.m., tescharlotte.org. Budget battles in Washington, the latest political showdown over the government shutdown, funding the government, and extending the debt limit, all topics of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. By the way, thanks to your early pledges, we have already eliminated 3 days from the upcoming fall drive. Another $55,000 raised before October the 9th will eliminate a third day. So thank you for already getting to the point here.
No pledge drive? You could make it happen. I'm Peter Sagal, and once again, WFAE is encouraging you to contribute before the campaign starts to eliminate days of the pledge drive. Thanks to your efforts, WFAE has eliminated 4, even 5 days of its on-air campaigns. Can you imagine eliminating all of them, all 10? It's possible when you go online and contribute at WFAE.org. You can make public radio history by eliminating the entire WFAE pledge drive by contributing now.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Affordable Health Care Act and the exchanges that opened today at healthcare.gov with Renard Murray, Regional Administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in Atlanta. He joins us by phone. And in our studio, Bob Seehausen, Senior VP with Novant Health, Don Jonas, Executive Director of Care Ring that helps with underinsured and uninsured people, and Adam Linker, Policy Analyst with the Health Access Coalition of the North Carolina Justice Center. We talked about losing your job. If you buy one of these policies, in the old days, if you lost your job and you were covered under your job, you would lose that insurance, but you had an opportunity to buy a COBRA insurance package that would tide you over till you found your next job. What happens in this situation?
I think depending on eligibility requirements, you may have the option of continuing COBRA and looking at the exchange and making a decision.
But if you buy health care insurance policies directly from the exchange, it's not connected to your employment, is it?
No, it's not.
So you won't lose the policy, but are you saying that a COBRA policy might be cheaper?
I doubt it. You'd have to look at the individual family situation and run the subsidies.
There was worry when we started talking about universal health coverage, which this is not, that there would not be enough doctors and nurses to take care of the surge of people who would suddenly have access to health care. And there was an article recently about this that said that there will be more physician assistants seeing people now, because there are not as many doctors available with all the new people. So if you want a doctor that stays with you and your family who knows your history, you'll have to pay a lot more because it will essentially become concierge service. Is that how you see it?
No. We don't think so. We're doing everything we can to expand access, whether it's through, online communications, expanded office hours, walk-in. We don't see the concierge going beyond a certain niche in the population.
Okay, we have a lot of people who want to talk about this, but before we bring them on and before I read all the ton of emails, let's talk about prescription drugs and other drugs. Prescription drugs, are they covered under these policies that you can buy through the healthcare exchanges?
Yes, Mike, they are. In terms of the coverages, every plan that's in the marketplace has to provide what we call 10 essential benefit categories. Prescription drugs is one of those categories that must be provided by every plan that's offering coverage in the marketplace. Something else is preventive services, primary care. Those are the kinds of things that have to be provided. So prescription drugs is definitely covered by every plan in the marketplace.
What about drugs for specialty situations? Like sometimes HIV patients have $20,000 in drug expenses every year. Cancer patients can spend $100,000 on a single chemotherapy treatment. Are those covered under these insurance policies?
You need to look at the individual insurance policies. People with special pharmaceutical needs, people who are taking drugs that they are worried may not be covered, really should walk through plans with somebody to help them if they need it, so that they can make sure their drugs are covered.
What about lower-income people who are on these special programs that pay for their drugs because they don't have an insurance policy and they don't have the income to support the payment for the cost of the drugs? If suddenly they are insured, do those programs that pay for those drugs become unavailable to them?
If they're insured, they would work through their insurance in order to get the prescription drugs. But for those folks that are not going to be able to access the marketplace, or those that are not going to take advantage of North Carolina not expanding Medicaid, they continue to be able to work with NC Medisys that provides these.
So it's a pretty sticky wicket for people in certain very special situations. They have to be very careful when they decide what they're going to do, it seems to me.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who would they go to make sure that they don't screw up? Because that could have serious implications on your life.
Well, I think when they go into the marketplace, to the healthcare.gov website, you can look at the actual insurance plan to see what's being provided. And as was mentioned, as we talked about earlier today, agents and brokers will still be available to help individuals, and we know that they've done that for years, Mike, in terms of helping individuals to understand their options. And so those will still be available, as well as a number of other sources available throughout the communities there that can help people to navigate the marketplace. So we think that there's going to be a lot of options available for individuals to make that choice that's going to best fit their needs. It's, you know, of course, situations vary by individual.
And I would definitely recommend that people go to the insurer website to do a formulary search if they've got special medication needs, particularly some of the specialty pharma. Your insurance website should allow you to look that up, and you can see if it's covered.
There are people, politicians out there who are against this act because they say it's leading America to a part-time economy, that employers cannot afford to buy health care for their employees, and therefore they will not employ them full-time because you don't have to give insurance coverage to people who are part-time employees. Do you think that is happening or will happen?
I mean, in North Carolina, we had actuaries who do this for a living study the North Carolina market and look at what's happening with insurance. And they sort of said when this shakes out, the same number of people after reform is implemented will have employer-based insurance as they have before reform. So that means some people will be taking up employer-sponsored insurance that didn't before, and there are some people who will be losing it. But in the end, it's going to be about the same number.
I think the other feature is that there was a lot of product on the street that people thought was insurance, but in the industry it was called mini-med policies, and people might have thought they were insured and only had $1,000 a year coverage or $500 a day inpatient, or, you know, I'm making up limits, but we see it all the time in our healthcare institutions when somebody comes in for an inpatient stay, an outpatient surgery, and their insurance just stops paying because it really isn't insurance.
Let me bring someone into this conversation. Amy in Statesville, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm 31 years old, self-employed. I'm a decently healthy person, but because I had two pre-existing conditions that did not in any way affect my daily life, the cheapest comprehensive health insurance plan I could find before the Affordable Care Act was $1,000 a month over that. So I had to settle for catastrophe medical insurance that was still almost $500 a month. If I could see the secret questions on the health care exchange, I would have already signed up. So I think there's a large demographic of people out here that have wanted good health insurance and just couldn't get it. And I'm one of those.
Bob?
I would say the first 17,000 people in the state who are going to sign up are the members of the Inclusive Health High Risk Pool, because they have been excluded from affordable insurance because of the structure of the market. The Affordable Care Act addresses that. Those high-risk pools go away. Those people need insurance and will be granted insurance without exclusions because of their health conditions.
Amy, thank you for your call. Email from Eric says, I'm hearing lots of people in social media here in North Carolina stating that they are receiving letters from their insurance company stating that their current policy rates are increasing significantly, and it's fueling more partisan rhetoric against the Affordable Care Act. Is the continual pitch from the president of, if you have insurance, you can keep it, leaving out an important clause of, but your own insurance plan may change, get more expensive? Or is this just a North Carolina issue due to the rejection of the Medicaid-Medicare expansion?
What the letters that they're receiving are from their insurance company, and it's saying you should renew your policy now, early, before December 15th. And they're saying if you renew your policy now, your rates won't go up very much, but if you wait and renew it, then your rate will go way up. And I think it's an unfortunate practice where insurance companies are trying to keep all of their current customers by saying your rates are going to go way up. But that what they're doing is looking at what the insurance company considers a comparable policy. Mm-hmm. But if people go on to the exchange, which they can do now and for the next couple months before December 15th, they can compare themselves and see whether they can get a more affordable policy.
So let me go back to this email question. Mm-hmm. Under this law, we are being told and have been told repeatedly, like your insurance, keep it. As a matter of fact, I think I saw this on the website. Like your insurance, keep it. Happy with your Medicare? Keep it. Sick? You cannot be denied insurance coverage. The dollar limits on health care coverage, the caps, are gone. Is that still true?
Yes, that is definitely so true, Mike. And one of the things that the Affordable Care Act did, it eliminated those lifetime caps and those annual limits that you just talked about. And going back to Eric's questions about the price increases, if you have a policy, an employer-sponsored policy, we are asking that you keep that because it might be a policy that you like. But if you don't like that employer-sponsored insurance policy because it's too expensive or you find that it might not work for you, you can go to the marketplace to look for coverage options there. But the only difference is you may not qualify for the tax credits that we mentioned earlier, but you can get a cheaper policy if possible in the marketplace.
So
we do ask people to look.
So if that is all true, if everything we've been told and everything I just said is true, why so much opposition to a plan that is not a government health insurance plan? This is the private sector providing these insurance policies. Why so much opposition?
I think it's largely politics.
But why?
What I understand is you've got me. It's based on the battles in Washington and the jockeying for control of the Senate and the House. We understand that there was the same opposition to Medicare, same opposition to Medicare Part D, the drug benefit. So this is not a new phenomenon.
The taxes are going up. I mean, this is not free. Everything from tanning beds to higher wealth individuals to employers, it comes with a cost. And I think there may be some of that anger towards the system is coming from frustration over the taxes.
It's been said, and it's been said on NPR, according to Zani and Huntersville at least, that the Affordable Care Act is more of insurance reform than it is health care reform. And you're all nodding.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Absolutely.
So this is not health care reform.
No, not in the least. This gives people access to insurance who have been denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions. It creates visibility. How often have we been able to compare prices across the country? This is the first time ever.
So it's
injecting some market forces into a structurally broken insurance process.
I would say it's mostly insurance reform with some healthcare reform tacked on, because there are some system reforms in the Affordable Care Act and some incentives, So a new innovation center in Medicare, for example, that's looking at new ways of delivering care, and there's new incentives in Medicare to deliver more efficient care.
So the Affordable Care Act focuses on increasing access to insurance. More people will come in the door. Hospitals will make more money. Insurance companies will make more money, one presumes, when this all shakes out. Does it help with health outcomes? Will people be weller, longer, et cetera?
It's going to go part of the way. I'd like to clarify one thing.
Does it lower the cost of health care?
Well, that will remain to be seen. It depends how much uptake we get, and if it reduces the uncompensated care burden, then it has that potential. I'd also like to point out that this is still a net negative for hospitals, because we're paying for this with reductions on the back end from CMS. So this is not net positive.
What does that mean?
There are reductions in disproportionate share payments to hospitals. As an employer, we're paying additional funds for the 38,000 covered lives that we have. So it's not a net positive, but we hope that by getting people into the market and ideally, we could get Medicaid expanded. That would be a huge help.
That's the problem I was going to say with not expanding Medicaid, because you have cuts in Medicare payments to hospitals, new expenses for hospitals, but now they're not getting the new revenue from Medicaid expansion.
When you go to the healthcare exchanges, when you're ready to bite the bullet and buy a policy, you have to put in a lot of information about your personal self, your social security number, your income. I would assume that you have to show pay stubs, or you send your tax records. Who sees that information? How secure is this website? Where does that information go? Is it going to insurance companies? Are insurance companies looking at your tax returns?
Well, the insurance companies, are looking at some of your information to figure out whether you've qualified for subsidies.
They are, or the government is? Because this is a healthcare.gov website.
Right, right. And all of these, both the insurance company and healthcare.gov, has spent a lot of time.
What right does the insurance company have to know how much I made or what my tax return looks like?
Well, they have to set up all of these IT systems so they talk to each other. But all of these are also built with a lot of security. I would say privacy and security were probably the top two concerns.
Gardner emails, when you try to enter the security questions on the website, this is this morning, there are none on their website.
So, right, and we recognized that this morning, Mike. We saw that as an issue, and it's being worked upon and looked upon right now to get that resolved. But if I can go back to your original question about uploading information. When you upload information onto the healthcare.gov, it's really not saving that information onto our systems. The information is only being used to make those determinations about whether or not you qualify for a subsidy or tax credit, or whether or not there's something else that you would qualify for in the marketplace. Because in the marketplace, not only are you applying for the marketplace insurance, but you could also get coverage for Medicaid or for the Children's Health Insurance Program. So those have to actually look at income, citizenship status, and some other things to make sure you make that qualification. But once that determination is made, that information is not stored into the hub. It actually goes away. It's just being used to make those determinations.
According to the website, the good news about this is that there is no wrong door. Once you fill out your application and hit send, it will go to the right place, whether you qualify for Medicaid, tax credits, whether you have to pay full freight on insurance. Is there a way to appeal a decision that this machine makes?
Yes, that will be appeal rights. So once your decision's made on the system, it will let you know what, as a consumer, what your appeal rights would be. And it would guide you through the process of filing the appropriate appeals if necessary.
We needed more than an hour to cover this today. just scratching the surface, and I apologize, but the clock rules. Renard Murray, Regional Administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the 13-state region, which is the largest user of Medicare and Medicaid in the country. He's in Atlanta. Bob Seehausen with Novant Health. Don Jonas with the Care Ring. And Adam Linker with the North Carolina Justice Center. Thank you for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.